Good morning. It's an honor for me to be here with you today. As a pilgrim in the United Church of Christ, I feel that I'm worshiping with my closest relatives, our Unitarian Universalist cousins. I have tremendous respect and affinity for your principles, and I prize your leadership on social justice issues. And speaking of justice, let me both congratulate and thank you for your recent vote to become a welcoming congregation. I understand many members will be marching this afternoon in today's Gay Pride Parade. And I believe your vote and your marching is an important witness. Many gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered folks still face much discrimination. The pervasiveness of discrimination has improved quite a bit since I was young, but it's still there in every aspect of life. And unfortunately, much of this discrimination is fueled by religious people, certain that God somehow cares more about who you love than whether you love. I won't tell you my entire story, although I'm sure you'd find it endlessly fascinating. I will tell you, though, that I grew up the daughter of a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastor. That denomination was and is of the opinion that homosexuality is a sin. I went to college in Texas and had many interesting sort of encounters with Southern Baptists and other conservative evangelical Christians. Now, I've known since high school, and probably before that, that I was a lesbian, even though I didn't have the word for it. When I came out in college, the Christian community was less than excited or welcoming. I'm sure that's an understatement. The Unitarians probably would have been more accepting, but I didn't know any. It is no overstatement to say that the reason I delayed coming out and the reason that I rejected religion for a great length of time was because of the narrow-mindedness of people who claim to follow God. And my experience is hardly unique. As you all know, one of the favorite tools of the religious right is to quote, really to proof text, that tradition's most sacred writings. So here in the United States, the Christian right makes a hobby of lobbing a handful of quotes from the Bible, usually without any reference to the social context, to argue the inequality in God's eyes of various groups of people. The current flavor of the day is gays and lesbians. So then, doesn't it seem crazy that I've selected a reading from the Apostle Paul in a tradition where I don't have to read from the Bible to stand up here and preach? Oh, sure, everyone knows Paul to be a wild-eyed radical feminist, a totally go-with-the-flow, love-the-one-you're-with kind of guy. So why not choose him? One of the more surprising developments in my spiritual journey is to have gone from feeling oppressed by Paul to dismissing Paul and Christianity to reclaiming Paul. I plan to make Paul my ally in the fight for justice and equality for all people. This passage is one of the common lectionary readings today for most of the Christian denominations, including the Roman Catholic Church. I know the Unitarian Universalist Association does not follow the lectionary, and that you've opened the door to readings from all sources inspirational, and I think that's wonderful. An uncommon lectionary, if you will. But when I checked the lectionary, out of habit as much as anything else, I was glad to see one of my favorite passages there. This passage from Galatians is an integral text for LGBT people within Christian traditions to get our rights acknowledged and to get our members ordained. Then I learned from Kleber that this congregation had just voted to become welcoming and to march in the Pride Parade. When I discovered that today was the day of the parade, which was a surprise to Kleber and to myself when we worked out the date for me being here, I thought that this was a coming together that Carl Jung would call synchronicity, a meaningful coincidence. Now, I doubt that Archbishop Burke will hear neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male and female this morning, and be so moved that he will choose to march with the pro-lesbian gay group Dignity. Yet I'm here to tell you that this promise of radical equality resonates with many groups of people who have been marginalized because of their race, their ethnicity, their economic or social status, their gender, or their sexual orientation. We argue that this ancient Christian baptismal creed affirms the loving of all people without regard to orientation or identity. Now, such affirmation probably was not envisioned 2,000 years ago, but the promise it contains certainly arcs in that direction. Neither Jesus nor the early Christian church believed that participation in God's realm was dependent on any of the distinctions that we humans tend to make. I find this promise heartening, but I do need to clarify what this Galatians passage does not mean. Radical equality, radical inclusivity, does not signify a radical invisibility. It means that we work for equality among all people. It means that we recognize and value the various identities that we have, all of our uniqueness, all of our individuality, and all of our diversity. To work for equality does not require that we become homogeneous human beings, as if that were even possible. Rather, it means that we see a spark of the divine light made manifest in all people. This divine image that we all bear transcends everything else without denying any of it. Martin Luther King Jr. considered this passage from Galatians to be the heart of the Christian gospel. He used the universalism of this passage to dismantle segregation. This passage is one of the foundations to the beloved community that he spoke so eloquently about. Now, I'm with any of you whose impulse is to read King before wondering what Paul has to say. Yet King was able to read, to read Paul and to see liberation from oppression. King was able to read Paul and see an essential truth about human dignity. King was able to read Paul and give us the vision of beloved community. King believed that the dream of beloved community was an attainable goal. His dream continues to call us to beloved community. His words, his vision, calls us to create a world in which each person is valued as a child of God. A world in which the inherent worth of every person is valued, is recognized. A world in which there is no hunger or homelessness or hatred of the other. A world in which our interconnectedness is acknowledged. As James Baldwin said, the moment we cease to hold each other, the moment we break faith with another, the sea engulfs us and the light goes out. I believe this congregation's decision to be a welcoming congregation and to take that welcome to the Pride Parade this afternoon is another step in building beloved community. You have taken another step in making this congregation a beloved community, lowercase b and c. You promise one another to stand together in relations marked by love and respect, as well as challenge and support. In living this way, you offer an alternative way of living and being than that of our dominant culture. And isn't this call to radical equality and radical inclusivity, this call that you all have answered, also a call to transformation? When we follow that call, we begin the process of transforming ourselves and the world. One person, one relationship, one group at a time, then on to the larger world. The community expands to embrace all. Now here comes the kicker. We need to embrace that witness to the rest of the world. And First Unitarian Universalist in Alton has chosen that path of witness in its promise to march this afternoon. Strangely enough, this witness you have chosen brings me back to my statement earlier that I plan to make Paul my ally in all matters of struggle. I think Galatians 3 could easily be read as there is neither Iraqi nor American, neither insured nor uninsured, and the list goes on. And here's where it can get hard for religious progressives. I believe that in our 21st century culture, it's not only crucial that we act for justice, that we live out our dream of inclusivity. It's also crucial that we identify ourselves as people of faith when we do so. I know this is hard. Believe me, when I told people I was entering seminary, I more defined myself as, I am not a fundamentalist, I am not an evangelical, as if. Even now, when I'm at a political event or with progressives, it's hard to say, I believe the radical vision of Jesus and the God he experienced compels me to act. That's true. It's a mouthful, but it's hard to do that. I imagine Unitarian Universalists have the same difficulty with announcing that the actions that flow from your principles are in fact rooted in those principles. Sometimes even the words faith and religion make us uncomfortable. I think this discomfort arises from the triumph of the religious right in recent decades. The religious right has been way too effective in claiming its way of faith as the only way. The religious right has been far too effective in claiming the moral ground. The religious right has been far too effective in framing debate on almost all issues so that any debate is done on their terms. I believe that this effectiveness demands those of us who yearn for the beloved community of King to put our progressive voices into the fray. And while we're in the fray, we need to come out of the closet as people of faith. And what more persuasive way to engage the debate with the Christian right than to use the words and authors that they tend to find the most persuasive? And here is where Paul becomes my ally. The Apostle Paul, of all people, is on the side of progressives who seek to enlarge community. By the way, as an aside, you do know that Paul did not write those books that contain women submit to your husband, right? At least that's what the vast majority of scholars believe, including many conservative Christian theologians. But I digress. In Galatians, Paul stands up to the fundamentalists of his day. He was saying that a person could leave rather large sections of the Hebrew scriptures behind and look at those texts in light of the inclusivity that Jesus taught. His Christian opponents were absolutely appalled. Who was Paul to water down the very word of God? There is an irony to this picture that I find delightful. Today, it's the religious progressives who are accused of watering down the Bible, in part by not granting it primary authority in our lives. But here again, Paul is my ally. Knowledge of these texts and their history helps me to engage the debate. It may not convince many on the right, but it may be the voice that many who are raised in those traditions long to hear, a voice of faith and reason, a voice that loves God and believes that God loves all people, not in spite of who they are, but exactly as they are. And maybe, just maybe, this engagement will further the creation of beloved community. The first Unitarian Universalist principle is to respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That sounds like the first step in building King's beloved community. Yet in embracing Martin Luther King, you not only embrace perhaps the greatest U.S. American prophet and theologian, you also claim Paul. In claiming Paul, you recognize and honor both the Universalist and the Christian roots of the Unitarian Universalist heritage. And today, you follow the arc of dignity that flows from Jesus, from Paul, from King, and from the Unitarian Universalist principles as this congregation moves forward for gay rights. There's an African proverb, when you pray, move your feet. Today, let us do just that.